We're convening at 5:36. And go down through the list. James Sagatin. I should say Vanessa Dixon Briggs first, just because.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Thank you.
How about that?
See,
like magic.
I was. I should just have called on you sooner. You know?
It's like the magic. It's the magic is called Sagerton. It's the magic of Sagerton.
Well, thank you. I now have you marked present, and that's 100% attendance today. So we definitely have quorum. And James Sagerton.
Here.
Thank you. Minerva Sanders.
Present.
This is Beth von Gunten. I'm present. Michael D.D. White.
I'm here.
Thank you. Is Stu Cohen Johnson with us by any chance? If she turns
what
up
was,
later.
What was
we'll
that know. Name? What was that name, Beth?
Stu Cohen Johnson is.
Okay.
She was a member of the current KPFK LSB who was led to believe that she'd been elected to the governance committee, although they neglected the protocol, which is not her fault. And
gotcha.
I wanted to honor her interest and her diligence in taking on this dry work and let her know that she's welcome. We just can't count her as a member. And so she,
gotcha.
I have contact with her elsewhere and we've talked about it. So she's cool with it all. But
okay.
If she shows up later, I'll list her as a guest as I did last time.
Okie dokie.
So the next agenda item is to adopt an agenda. So I'll read the agenda briefly. First is to convene. The item number two is roll call, which we've now done. Item number three is agenda approval. Item four is to elect chair. Item five is to set the next meeting date and time. Six is to review the scope of the work. Seven is to consider process and resources available. Eight is to identify low-hanging fruit, articles already in compliance if possible. Nine is to take on assignments for those who are willing and to identify interests. And that would bring us to adjourning. And I haven't set a time. I'll leave it up to the committee. This is Friday, and out here it's quitting time, so I don't have any interest in going all that late. I think this is an orderly enough agenda. We can probably get through it in pretty quick time. So is there discussion of the agenda?
No objections.
Okay, I should ask if there are there any objections to the agenda as proposed?
No.
If not, then we will adopt the agenda as is, and that brings us to the next item. We haven't ever actually, well, I guess we've only met just this once before, so we're not that far behind, but we haven't actually formally elected a chair yet. So we need to do that.
So I nominate Beth. Oh, I don't. What were you saying?
Oh, that's okay. Thank you. And
right,
I would accept. I should ask whether there are people who would prefer to do this by electronic vote where there are write-in spaces and everybody gets a secret ballot. Because that's an option. If it's uncontested, then we could go ahead uncontested, then it would be an option to do it here tonight. So, discussion.
Oh, is anyone other than you interested? Are there any other nominations?
Chair, may I be recognized?
Oops, I'm sorry. That would be the protocol.
That's okay.
Sure, James. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say that I'm in favor of having an election now, doing it by a vote over the phone. If we need to, why don't we vote on that, after any other discussion?
Okay.
May I be recognized?
Yes, Michael, go ahead.
I think it's pointed out that if we have one person nominated and running, we can do it by acclaim, and the question about the how the vote should be taken is obviated.
Right. Right. As long as there's no objection to that process.
Well, why don't we see if there's any other nominees?
Good process. Are there any other nominations? Self-nomination is always an option. Hearing none, and is there any objection to my serving as chair? Hearing no objection, I guess I'm now chair by acclamation. So we'll proceed on that basis.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been waiting with bated breath. that's what I need, another set of work. It's okay. I'm doing the work anyway. You know, might as well put it to good use. So setting the next time, that's item number 5, setting the next meeting time and date presents us with a dilemma. This is near enough the end of the year, and enough of the PNB committees and other committees are being run on an ad hoc basis so that the calendar is absolutely jammed. And it presents us with very few options, which is how we ended up with here on a Friday, even when that's a challenge for making quorum. This is the last, I've been looking for windows between in our standard time frame, like 8:30 East Coast, 5:30 West Coast, Monday through Friday, to keep Pacifica from bleeding over into what little life I have left. That's what's all jammed up right now. Our next governance committee is next Wednesday, so we need to be prepared to report something there. I don't see unless we want to meet, I guess I'm the only West Coast person, so I could compromise on the 5:30 end because my time is more or less my own to manage, as long as I squeeze everything in. If it's up to the committee, but if there's an interest in meeting once more before the governance committee meeting next Wednesday, it would be an option to try to do that, say maybe a couple of hours before that meeting at 2:30 or 3:30 East Coast time. So that's one option.
I'm sorry, what day of the week were you talking about?
Next Wednesday. That would be immediately leading up to the governance committee. Immediately prior to the governance committee. So that's trying to squeeze a lot in. At least it's the same subject matter, so you wouldn't have to shift gears too much. And maybe people would, maybe it makes a difference what all we get done today and whether we feel to need to meet again that soon. So maybe we should reconsider this item again at the end of the agenda after we see how much we get done.
This is Minerva. That's what I would suggest. We don't know what we're dealing with here first.
Okay.
And then once we get into this, then you could identify if we need another meeting or what, one before the meeting. And then the other question that I have is, this committee stays in place until the end of this year, or what happens? Because
this committee stays, that's a really good question. And it's one of the places where our bylaws are most complicated. This committee stays in place until the members of the National Governance Committee are replaced. After the seating of the new delegates in December and after the election of the new directors in January, and then after that newly seated PNB has elections itself from the PNB to the national committees. I guess someplace in there, too, that the local station boards also have elections. So not all members of the governance committee will be replaced at one time. It'll be staggered according to when each of these various bodies have their elections, but we should be prepared for members to start turning over anytime into January and through February, and sometimes it takes the next committee time to get organized enough to actually meet. So March, if we're lucky, if there's carryover. And I would highly recommend that anybody here who does carry over do whatever is within your means to try to help the governance committee get organized enough to meet early and choose a chair and get meetings on the year for the rest of the year before the times are all taken up, those kinds of things, because that didn't happen this year and it resulted in this committee not really getting started until like June. So it's a good time to ask that question. It's a well-timed question, Minerva, because this is when we're still in a position to make a difference there if we see it coming. So is there any opposition to moving item number 5 to the end of the agenda so that we can see what we need to get done before we set another time? Hearing no objection, that's what we're going to do. So this is actually the first chance we've had to review the scope of work, item number 6. I'll summarize very briefly that our mandate here is to review existing Pacifica bylaws for their compliance with current California law, because any part of our bylaws that is not in compliance won't stand up to legal scrutiny, won't be defensible, and will have us living a delusion. So this is our opportunity for a reality check. California law is updated. The California legislature updates the California Corporations Code, including the nonprofit section, once every 3 years, usually running with the years that are multiples of 3, which means that the law has been updated roughly 7 cycles since our bylaws were adopted. And to the best of my knowledge, our bylaws have never been reviewed for compliance since they were first adopted in 2002, 2003. So we're overdue. That's the task at hand. And now I'll I'll ask for discussion. I'll take a stack. When everybody speaks. Yes.
Okay.
I think you laid it out very nicely. That's what we need to do. And so the first thing I think we need to do is find out what local sources each of us has for the California statutes, which can be found at local libraries, courthouses, law school libraries, larger libraries will have them. I checked my local county library. They did not have them. So I'm now going to check some law schools. And it may be an issue for some people I know because I'm an alumni of a law school. I can do that easily. I don't know how easy that is for everybody else, and I don't know to what extent they're online. Maybe Michael would know about that. That's all I have.
But could I ask for clarification? Are you referring to something more than the actual current code itself?
Well, current code, case law that might apply to certain aspects of it, maybe articles of interpretation.
Okay. Because I try
to. The code is online, but I'm not sure how to access it myself.
Okay. All right. But just for future reference, I include those links, both to our bylaws and to the current law online, pretty much with every agenda so far, but that's not interpretation and all the rest of it. You're right, there's much more. So was somebody else asking for this floor?
No, I was just clearing my throat.
Okay.
I can be recognized.
Yeah, let's hear from Michael. Thank you.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah, I would suspect that the laws are online. And probably that includes the chapter laws with the amendments. I would hope that there's some kind of source. Some sort of compendium that focuses on the changes. The formal set of the corporately owned stuff is probably only available with Westlaw or in a law library, but I'm not sure. And that would have things like here's the statute, and then down below it, here's the dates of that statute's changes and the content of the changes and any litigation that's taken place under the different sections.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, James, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that we're not the only organization organized in California, incorporated in California, that has had to do this. So it wouldn't surprise me that there were, some of this material was available also online. I'm trying to think of one organization that deals with California nonprofits. Can't think of the name at the moment. But let's all try to look into all of that. And I did want to ask Michael one more thing. Michael is... back when I was doing this more, you had to, in order to get Westlaw and some of these materials, you had to have a subscription. And is that still the case for Westlaw?
You have to have a subscription. What was the end of your question?
Just that, do you need a subscription for Westlaw? And do we have any access to that through any buddy or any place that we know of? Again, as an alumnus, I think you can go to, I can go back to my law school and utilize their facilities. I don't know about for other people.
I don't have a subscription because it's expensive.
you saw through my the veil. That was what I was really asking.
Who has free access as law students have free access. And we could figure out how to make this a legal project for a law school.
There you go. Make the students do it.
I'll weigh in there and say, A, that our local, our county government center, the Hall of Justice, half of that complex, does have a hard copy law library and a self-help law library, which I assume is probably more quote-unquote accessible upstairs. I haven't actually used either one, but I know where they're located. I've been through them. And across the street from there are, I can think of at least two law schools. And it wouldn't be hard to inquire there about anybody looking for a project, see who I could recruit. So that's an excellent idea. I had not thought of that yet. I'm glad we got that far.
Vanessa asking to be recognized.
Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you all correctly, what I hear you saying is to do some research in law libraries to see what the applicable laws are for, presumably, I guess, a nonprofit, and then look at our bylaws to see if we're in compliance. Is there any thought to, like, is there an organization, for, like, I'm blanking on the name, like in D.C., there's like an association of associations, an association that is sort of a clearinghouse of information for nonprofits, you know, for people who are trying to start a nonprofit. Is there that type of organization, and or we can just sort of leave it to the lawyers to do the, you know, do the research in the legal, you know, references. But I'm just wondering if there's like an organization that sort of specializes in this sort of thing that could say, hey, if you're a California corporation and you're, you know, setting up your bylaws, this is what you need to be in compliance with, or is that just kind of wishful thinking?
No, there is something. It's called California Nonprofits, I think.
That's right. And it's specific to California law, which matters because that's the particular law that we're dealing with. Looking online and finding things for Nevada or Oklahoma or something isn't going to cut it. So it's good news to me that there are bodies somewhere that list changes by, I don't know, by legislative cycle or whatever, where those can be looked up so that we don't have to just comb through the actual law itself. Not that we shouldn't do that too. Pacifica has in the past been a member of Cal Nonprofits as recently as Lydia's era, given the dire financial straits we're in now. I would be surprised if we still have a membership, but I will ask ED. And I know at least some other people in the not as many as I used to, because everybody's been so not in circulation for the last 3 years that I don't run into people the way I used to. But there may be. I will look and see if I have access to Cal Nonprofits in other ways. They may even have resources online referring, because you're right, this is a predicament that other nonprofits find themselves in. Most bylaws don't get reviewed anywhere near as often as they should be. So this is a process they would like to encourage. And I'll bet they have at least advice about how to proceed.
Carol.
So, yes, Jane, go ahead.
No, Vanessa, go ahead.
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, if it wasn't anybody else, did somebody want to speak? Okay, I'll just say real quick. I think if all Google our own email accounts, just Google California nonprofits or Cal nonprofits. I think you're right, Beth. That's what it's called. I bet we'll find stuff in our own emails because I know it's been flying around, especially the directors that are here.
I've been on their mailing list in the past.
Yeah.
And I got that site bookmarked, so it's not hard to find them. It's a useful organization to get to know anyway, so I highly recommend going and exploring that site for this or anything else.
That could be a good first assignment, or, you know, part of our first assignment.
Right, especially for those who signed up for this drudgery out of an intense desire to learn more. I've been around bylaws a long time and on purpose, and so bylaws per se aren't new to me, bylaws assessment, but, you know, assessing bylaws as complicated as ours, as far out of date as ours, against a law as complex as California law, I have never done before. So I expect to learn a lot, and this it feels like just this much conversation has given me a couple of starting points where I can get a toehold so we can get this done. So thank you.
Vanessa to the stack again, please.
Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay. Is there potentially any value in checking with the Library of Congress?
I mean, it's a wonderful place. I would never try to talk anybody out of conferring with the Library of Congress, but it's a lot less specific. It's far more general. There are much more specific places that can help us hone in.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I will be looking between now and whenever we meet again and whenever I turn up anything interesting, or if anybody else does too, I would request post it to the committee, to the list, so that we can see, so that everybody has access to anything useful, and we can see whether we're making progress or there's something more we need. I guess I would suggest that we have kind of merged this item with item number 7 to consider process and resources available. So we're working our way right through this agenda.
Sorry, may I speak?
Okay.
Yes, please go ahead, James.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a possible recommendation for Vanessa, and that would be, I know that there are some law schools in D.C. You could check if they're open to the public at all. The Library of Congress would certainly have the California statutes and some other resources. You know, they've got everything. Finding it might be another issue, but if you go to the people that work there and are there to help people find things, I'm sure they could point you in the right direction.
So what would be the question to ask? I'm looking for what statutes?
California statutes. You're looking for Cal nonprofits, if they have publications, which I'm sure they do. I know they do. And you'd be looking for articles about people revising their bylaws in California.
Okay.
And Vanessa, follow up on that, the code, I send, every time I send out the agenda or minutes, or if I'm trying to append to pretty much all the documents for this work group, not just the link to the bylaws, but the link to the actual California code, section by section.
Okay.
And so if you link to that, then you've got to work through like layers of, it's the whole, the link is to the entire corporation's code, and only one, yeah, that includes for-profit and mutual and other kinds of corporations. And you're looking for the non-profit code. And
okay.
I can look up the section number and send that to to help you zero in. And then, the code is written, certain articles. First, in order to incorporate as a nonprofit and process money, I think is usually the criteria, then you have to incorporate, and that requires bylaws. And the law stipulates certain requirements for what are in the bylaws. And they do that section by section, which in our bylaws shows up as article by article. So you can you can compare our article number one to the actual section, the discrete section in the law that says what has to be in there. Now, the first article is usually very simple, straightforward. The name of this corporation is blank. And fortunately, that's one of the few things that is not in dispute within Pacifica at the moment. So probably that will qualify as low-hanging fruit, and we can mark that as one article done. Good for us. And you can then go on. Some of our articles are actually listed verbatim from whatever the law was at the time that the bylaws were passed, and with any luck, if it hasn't changed or hasn't changed much, that's actually a very, very practical practice within drafting bylaws, because the language in the law has already stood the test of time. And it will hold up in court. You don't, if you can keep your nonprofit in compliance with whatever those words are, then you know that whatever you're doing will hold up under legal scrutiny, which simplifies life wonderfully. And the training I had in bylaws assessment started with first, bylaws are a legal document. With any luck, if your bylaws are well written and the organization is clear about its purpose and not in dispute, you'll draft the bylaws and they may well sit and gather dust on the shelf for years. If you need them again, it's likely to settle a dispute. And those disputes will be legal disputes, and it always comes down to the question, are you or are you not in compliance with your own bylaws and the law?
Right.
And so if the law, if your bylaws are identical to the law, then you're halfway home. And in that training, I was also advised that the more creative and ambitious you get in drafting bylaws, the more of a challenge it will be to understand your bylaws, to comply with your own bylaws, to be sure that one part of your bylaws isn't conflicting with another part of your bylaws, that you've covered everything, and life gets complicated after that. Which is, that's where Pacifica kind of started out, and that's why it takes a whole committee of us, however long we're going to devote to this process, to work through it 20 years later. So we're lucky that at least a few of our bylaws are written verbatim over at what was then current law, and shouldn't be that hard to check against current law now. But so those will be the articles that we'll start with, and we'll just work our way through the articles that are easiest to verify, the ones that are least likely to change or shortest or most obviously in need of change, And that will narrow it down, hopefully, as we work through that list. It'll narrow it down to, for the latter part of this process, we will get to the bylaws that are not low-hanging fruit, that will require a lot more work and that will raise, you know, contentious issues. That mm-hmm. we don't have to cross that bridge yet. We're just going to start with, first step and follow that process where it leads. While we're on this item, I have a note here to myself to ask James and Michael, too, if he wants to weigh in on this, if James or either one of you could explain the process of shepherdizing or shepherdization.
I can do that. Michael, do you want to go ahead? I'm actually trying to look up the bylaws to find out. I believe we are an educational nonprofit. I don't know if we're an educational mutual benefit nonprofit. I'm just trying to look in the bylaws to find out the nature of our organization.
We're a public benefit, not a mutual would be like a food co-op or a credit union or Sun-Kissed.
We're a public benefit, an educational public benefit nonprofit.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, Michael, do you want to do shepherds or shall I do that?
Shepherdizing is when you're looking at case law and you want to, or the way statutory law has been interpreted by case law, and you think you know, you find a case and it says, the court says X, Y, and Z, and you say, oh, well, X, Y, and Z must be true, but then Shepherd, I can tell you if the court later said, no, that court was wrong, we're overturning it. and hopefully you'll understand, you'll get it. Sometimes there can be very subtle stuff where another court will have said something and it wasn't so clear and explicit that it was overturning the previous law, but maybe with some thinking you can realize that it did, so that Shepherds doesn't pick it up. But if it's a direct affirmation or confirmation, or another case saying this was good law in this case, and we're citing it now to apply that same law somewhere else. So it'll give you that kind of history.
May I add something, Seth?
Yes, please do. Go ahead.
So, Shepherds, you know, I date back to the time when most stuff was on paper and not, you know, we were just starting with computers. But if you have a case book, So you have statutes and you have case law. So in either one, you have volumes of sets of volumes where case law is laid out, statutes. In New Jersey, it's the New Jersey statutes. California statutes, and there's California annotated statutes where they give you explanations of what you're looking at and cases that deal with statutes. So you have statutes and case law. And for example, if there's a law that says, for example, Brown versus Board of Education, 1953. So that established certain things. Now, another case might have come after that because people were trying to get around Brown versus Board, and so cases continued to come out of that, interpreting that decision and, you know, dealing with new circumstances that had to be decided on by courts. So when you have a case law book, you have a volume of books that's about case law. And case law means different cases that have been decided that apply to a certain subject area. So you'll have the most recent cases come out in a bound volume. But then there are cases that come after the bound volume
was published, and that goes in a pocket part at the back of the case law book. And that will give you the recent updates since the book was published, and the pocket parts are switched out periodically as new stuff becomes available. And then there's an additional service. What, Michael, what's the service called that gives you the very latest? The slip, is it slip service?
Yeah, if you've got a law library, you have a company coming in to put in all update all the pocket parts, take out the old ones, yeah, and put in the new ones.
Right, and then there's a slip service that gives you stuff that's happened since the latest pocket part was published. New stuff keeps happening, so they update with a little tiny, you know, call it slip because it's a thin little thing. It just has the latest stuff since the pocket part was published. So an overview of shepherdizing is it's giving you the latest information that may have changed the stuff that's in the larger volumes. And when it's statutes, you know, if there are changes to statutes, you may have a pocket part in the statute book, and then you get a slip service for that too. If a statute is updated, if something happens that alters a statute or affects a statute. So it's based, shepherdizing just means you're getting the latest law. And, you know, we'll want to do that, but because of, you know, the nature of law, it's always changing. So as soon as we do this, things may start changing, and that's why we would want not to be the last ones to do this. Somebody else should do this in another 2 or 3 years. I think 3 years is the standard. And, you know, hopefully Pacifica will still be here, and somebody will take that on. And but in the meantime, we will have updated, you know, adequately for the present.
Thank you. So it sounds to me like shepherdization is a useful tool, and it may be useful to us later, but it's not the place to start. No,
I think the place to start is to find an article, maybe hopefully in Cal Nonprofits, about how to update your bylaws for, you know, an educational public benefit corporation, and how to do that, and possibly get some samples. Of course, because our bylaws are a little different, you know, we have a different structure. As Beth said, it may be a little complicated, and one of the complicated things we're going to have to do is, when you change one bylaw, sometimes that has ripple effects through the other bylaws. We're going to have to try and track all of that down.
Yes. Yep. And we're doing this.
May I say one other thing? I don't think everybody needs to trundle out to a law school and, you know, start trying to find all this stuff in paper form. I think, you know, if some of us start to look at it, we'll start to find, and Beth already has included links to online resources for the statutes, the California statutes. So that's probably the place to start, not running out and going to a law library.
If other people do come up with links, digital links to other resources, send them this way, and I will start to compile a library of such resources so that we have that, that we can pass on to whoever takes up this task next year and anybody else who's interested in the process, so that the next people won't have to start from scratch. Is there more to say about this now, or shall we move on to the next item? Hearing nothing further on this item, we will move on. Item number 8 is to identify low-hanging fruit, but I think I'm going to propose that we make that one of the voluntary assignments for people under item number 9, which is to take on assignments to start going through some of this work between now and whenever it is we get to meet again. I would say that identifying low-hanging fruit is one of those potential tasks. I'd be willing to sign up for that unless somebody else wants it. If somebody else is interested in, it's a good place to start to become familiar with the bylaws and the law.
Sure.
Yes.
I want to suggest that we have an email list for this group so that when somebody finds something, they can just send it to that list and then everybody will see it. That way, we don't even necessarily have to meet to share all of this. It'll just be shared on the list.
Yeah.
Way a lot of committees do.
And that sounds like a task. I can do that. The National Finance Committee uses Groups IO, which is free, and so does the local ham radio operators around here. So I know it's been vetted by the more technically adept people I know, and I know others who've set that up before. So if I need help, I know where to go. Making a note to myself.
This is Minerva.
For the last thing, it sounds
like
a couple.
Did you say that? Yeah, it was. Minerva asked to be recognized. I was just asking you to repeat what you just said.
I said that, I have to go back and look at the note now, but I said that James said he proposes that we have an email list, like a listserv for this list, this discrete task committee, subcommittee, which sounds like a good idea to me. And I suggested that we use Groups IO, which is the group that which is the option that the National Finance Committee also uses. It's a simple, free, accessible, not too hard to set up email to server. And I said I could do that. I've intended to learn to do that anyway, so it's kind of on my aspirational to-do list, so I can do that. And then Minerva asked for the stack.
Yes. Going back to number 8, where you have articles already in compliance, we're comparing our bylaws to the California nonprofit
code. Yes.
Code. Okay. And where did we say we find that code? That's what I just put something in on the internet and it came up with a lot of different areas. So
on the agenda that I sent today, there
right.
are two links, one to Pacifica bylaws and the other to the
right.
California Corporation Code. And it's long and complicated and dry, but it's all right there. And there are articles in our bylaws are listed in exactly the same order that they come up in the law. So if you start with article number 1.
Okay.
So are you interested in taking on that assignment?
I can attempt to. I see what you have sent to us, and I can make an attempt. And go from there. If I run into any issues, having emails would be good. I would just reach out to someone. Okay.
Excellent. That's good news. And so I've put you down for that. If you hit snags or questions or whatever, let me know, and I'd be happy to work through that with you.
Okay.
And do you all have my phone number? Is there anybody here who doesn't have my phone number?
I don't have it.
I will email it to you rather than record it on. So all the Maestro calls, all the meetings I chair are we use the Maestro call service and account of Pacifica, and they are automatically recorded so that even if I don't think to turn it on or whatever, it's still going to, it won't, doesn't matter if I forget, because it will be automatically recorded. And Otis, our tech guru, has direct access to them for later. So I will email you my phone number, Minerva. So
okay.
And I just have the one phone number, so that's what I've called you from before the governance committee. So you might have it in your phone records too, but I will still email it to you.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. I'm making a note to myself so I don't forget. And so then, Minerva has taken on a task. I've taken on a couple of tasks. I was hoping maybe I could make a couple of more specific requests to our more experienced, our members more experienced with the law. Particular areas of concern.
I can work on looking at the updates of the law.
Good. With you in particular, Michael, I had a specific request a while ago. I can send it again, but I have sent you at least once, maybe even more than that, an article I came across from a law firm who pointed out new recent changes to California law from, I think it was last year, possibly the year before, specifically regarding the effects of changes in the law on bylaws related to emergency management in this COVID era. And it caught my eye as significant. I have not had the time to really sit down and, you know, stew over it and work out what all that might mean, what implications that might mean. It has to do in part with the option to suspend parts of our current bylaws in quote-unquote an emergency, except there have been multiple emergencies extending over the last number of years out here in California. So effectively, you're never not in an emergency. And so we need to decide what that means. And it's not clear what might be required and what it's simply just opening up options. So I'll be looking for other information on that and asking around at other nonprofits. But if you would be willing at least to work through the article I sent and see what you think. And
all right. It sounds unfortunately suspect.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's just the general approach. I mean, it's sort of like, what was, it's in the context of COVID, how has COVID been any different from all sorts of things that we've had throughout our history? And, but COVID was used to suspend all sorts of provisions out of the United States Constitution, and we're getting people used just throwing out rules because someone declares an emergency. And the governments are it's getting to be a real problem. And then you know, they look to get people habituated to the idea that emergencies mean you throw out the rules.
Right. It's also in the context of the current efforts to change. They keep changing their reference to it, but under to put the World Health Organization in charge of what they're calling One Health and all.
So there's a provision to
override all national laws.
All the national governments. Right. To the World Health Organization under a 1948 treaty, and to do it by administrative changes that to the treaty that won't be, you know, it'll just be Biden administration saying, oh, I didn't say no to that. And then the regional administrator for the United States then has power over the United States government on behalf of the World Health Organization.
Right. That hasn't happened yet, but we're moving in that direction really rapidly. And the way it's set up, it will happen unless our representative to that process objects or resists. And that person is Javier Becerra, who used to be the Attorney General of California, which makes it all the more pertinent. So...
he's probably a Democratic operative, right?
Right. I think early on, I probably even, like, we're in a nonprofit environment, so I'll leave it to your imagination how I voted early on. But I followed this guy for the length of his career. So thank you for taking on that task.
Chair, may I be recognized?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I just took a moment and just Googled how to update your California educational nonprofit bylaws. And I got a whole plethora of resources and such. So I think we could all just start by doing some simple searches like that. And I got a very interesting one, Michael, that showed up that you might be interested in. It talks about can employees sit on the board of California Corporations Code Section 5227 limits the number of board members that may be an employee or contractor of their nonprofit. And it says not more than 49% may be interested persons. That's the provision, Michael, that came up when our LSB search committee tried to replace our program director. And they were, more like 60% employees, not 49%. So that came up right away in that search. So it's, you can see it's a good way to start. Just in order, you know, just to start shopping around and seeing what's out there.
That's really good news. That's a relief to hear that that's true. So, Jane, I have a particular request of you too, as one of our more legally adept members. And that is specifically that... our current bylaws have particular things to say about the Office of Treasurer. And California law also has particular things to say about the Office of Treasurer in any nonprofit, which, if I'm not mistaken, under California law is required. And this is not one of the simpler. This is not low-hanging fruit, but I know that it's necessary because I think it's one of the things where we're going to have to resolve some discrepancies between what we have and what the law requires. And if and you're familiar with the financial functions within the organization at the national level. So I can't think of anyone more appropriate to take an initial look at this and just report back about what you find. You don't have. I'm not asking you to solve this problem while on your lonesome yet. But if you could just compare what we have and what they have and how far apart those are, and bring that back to the committee, then and if you want to make suggestions or offer advice or whatever, you're always free to do that. You know, I would love to hear what you'd have to say on it. Would you be willing to take on that task for the next time we actually have a meeting?
Beth, I dread the thought that you might be talking to me, because I wasn't listening in the beginning when you started. But I did hear you say something about you have knowledge of the financials or something. So I thought maybe you were talking to me. Were you talking to me?
I was indeed.
About work?
About work. And you can commit to it sight unseen, or I could repeat myself.
What is the question?
The question is whether you would be, you yourself, James Sagerton, on behalf of this committee, would be willing to take an initial look at both the Pacifica bylaws what Pacifica bylaws have to say about the Office of Treasurer as compared to what current California law has to say about the Office of Treasurer. Because if I'm not mistaken, California law actually requires a treasurer, a designated treasurer?
Yeah, we are required to have a treasurer, but our bylaws make it impossible for the board treasurer to be the foundation treasurer. So it requires hiring an additional person or getting an additional volunteer. And yeah, that's something I wanted to get some clarity on anyway. So yes, I will do that. So you can mark that off on your list. And may I also just take this opportunity to say that I also looked up Cal Nonprofits. And it's just exactly what it sounds like. It's CALNON Profits, PROFITS.org. And when I went there, I initially got step-by-step guide for starting a California nonprofit. It talks about drafting the articles of incorporation, appoint a board of directors. So it's, you know, all the basics of what you need. And I haven't gotten to the point where I find out if they have any articles about updating your bylaws, but I'll keep scanning.
And they are by far, there are other organizations out here for California nonprofits, but they are by far the most comprehensive and sort of professional, and nonprofit professionals generally belong to that organization. They offer a lot of training and a lot of online resources. So I will, I'll get that link and include it in what will now become our growing library of resources at the footer of anything I send out for the committee.
I would also like to add that there was something in here. Again, just at first glance, I'm seeing these, sorts of things. But when you make changes to your bylaws, apparently you have to register that with the Attorney General's Office of California. So I hope we've been doing that, because we've made a few bylaws changes since I've been around. I never heard about anybody registering it with the Attorney General of the state of California. So that's, you might want to make a note of that as another little thing that we should look into.
Would you yourself be willing to take that on as homework between now and the next?
What I would actually prefer is if you just wrote it down as a thing that we need to do, and then I'll see, you know, how that fits into what else I have to do.
Okay. I'm writing it down.
Just a note, you know, a note of something to the effect of do we have to register our bylaws changes with the Attorney General of California or anybody else? I'm sure if you Googled that exact question, you might find the answer.
Okay, I've got it. I've started a to-do list at the end of my section on homework assignments, so it will come up again at the next meeting, and maybe somebody will know more by then. And so Minerva's going to go through the bylaws looking for the articles that are already in compliance, and I would suggest starting with the short ones. You'll get farther. And identify the low-hanging fruit, the articles that are already in compliance. She's going to work on that, and I will make myself available to support that process should she need it, and I'll send her my phone number. Michael has agreed to review what information we have about recent changes to the California nonprofit code regarding emergency management regulations. And James has agreed to compare current Pacifica bylaws regarding the Office of Treasurer with whatever the California code requirements are for the Office of Treasurer. Vanessa, do you have any particular... We haven't even had that conversation yet. I having worked with you a lot on the P&B, it's pretty obvious why you would have an interest in the bylaws in general, but do you have... Within that area, do you have a particular interest within bylaws? And or is there any other specific homework you would like to take on now to help prepare for the next meeting?
Well, I mean, just based on what we're doing now, it sort of sounds like we're all kind of doing the same thing in terms of just trying to get the resources. What's the appropriate resource? So we can kind of take it from there. So I can add to that. I presume we'll all sort of kind of come up with the same thing. Like Sagerton said, California Cal nonprofit. But, you know, I can kind of throw my research hat into the ring and you know, see what it produces.
Okay. All right.
May I add something on that point?
Yeah.
At Cal Nonprofits, I Googled how to update bylaws to comply with current California law, with current California statutes, and I right away started getting stuff. Not a particular article yet on how to do that, but, for example, stay out of hot water with the update, a nonprofit compliance checklist and webinar. So I'm sure that would be of interest. And there's all kinds of other stuff, which, you know, doesn't necessarily seem to be exactly on point with what we're looking for, but I'm pretty sure if I keep looking, I might find it.
Thank you. That's good.
Because you have to draft, for example, draft the bylaws and conflict of interest policy. I know we have a conflict of interest policy in our bylaws. Maybe check here to see if that's changed.
So this brings up what is usually considered a distinction between bylaws and policy. And from my perspective, one of the things that, again, from my perspective, loads Pacifica's bylaws and complicates our lives is that a lot of what would be called and drafted as policy in other organizations has ended up in the bylaws in Pacifica, which raises the stakes extremely and makes litigation from without and internecine litigation all that much more likely. And the attorney that kind of mentored me into this stuff, if he had seen these bylaws, the first thing he would say would be, unless California law requires that it be in the bylaws, don't put it in the bylaws. Put it as a freestanding policy. And then we need to compile all our policies from down through the years into one library of policies, including conflict of interest policy, and the law definitely requires that we have a whistleblower policy, and I've got actual libraries of policies that other organizations have used. Some are standard, some are customized for individual organizations. One was resurrected in the PNB last night that was very useful, that I probably hadn't seen the technical light of day since 2006. It would have been helpful to have that in a library someplace accessible to everyone, where we could have made more consistent use of it over the years. So one of the things we might... Yes, James, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish your thought.
I can wrap up with this, but after we get through the preliminaries in this process, one thing we might consider later in the process, maybe thinking about it as we go through all the bylaws, is to see whether there are elements in the bylaws that could be reincarnated into freestanding policies to unburden the bylaws of the excess. There's not anything we have to decide now. I don't even have specific proposals about which items, just for further thinking, for further down the road. You've got the floor, James.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and it brings up a point that I'm becoming aware of by just looking at this town nonprofit site, and that is that our specific task here is to make sure the bylaws are in compliance with the California corporation statutes. But there's a lot of other things that are going to be interrelated with this, like the articles of incorporation, policies, as you were just speaking about, Beth. So there may be, whether you have to report bylaws changes to the California Attorney General, et cetera. So I think, we should probably try to limit ourselves to fixing the bylaws first, but be aware that we're going to find rabbit holes all along the way that we could go into and probably should at some point. And if I could, I'd like to just read a little something here from this Cal nonprofit site. It was on point to what you were just saying. It says, separately articulated policies commonly supplement the bylaws in addressing key governance and management issues. For example, though not required by federal tax law, it is considered to be a best practice for any nonprofit to have an adopted conflict of interest policy. Additionally, a nonprofit must describe its policy regarding conflicts of interest in the IRS Form 1023. There's a rabbit hole for you.
Yep.
Accordingly, it would be advantageous for most nonprofits to adopt a policy similar and this is a great hint here, similar to accordingly, it would be advantageous for most nonprofits to adopt a policy similar to the sample policy provided in Appendix A of the instructions to Form 1023, the IRS. So there's a lead to a place where we could possibly extract, because I think our policy on conflict of interest, which Arthur found and had to utilize in that same question, Michael, about who can be on the committee that decides who the candidates are for in a search for a certain position. I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Can I ask you to send that link?
One more second. It's already in. Let me read it to you right here, so I don't have to try and copy it and send it. It's www.irs.gov. This is an IRS publications /pub/irs-pds.
Wait.
All right.
Hang on.
pub/pub for publications.
Yep.
/irs-pdf.
Yes.
/i. 1023 /i/1023.pdf, and that's just for the form, the IRS form 1023. But this little paragraph is in that search inside of Cal Nonprofits that I did for how to revise your bylaws for compliance with current California statutes.
So it
sounds... The thought I was going with it was that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, again, because Arthur had to pull it out for this issue at Pacifica, so I was looking at it, our conflict of interest policy is in the bylaws, as you were suggesting, Beth. So this would be an example of what you were suggesting, where perhaps we could pull that policy out of the bylaws and just keep it as a separate policy.
Right.
And therefore, when you want to change policies, you can just do it by a vote of the PNB. You don't have to go to a vote of the members. You don't have to go to get 3 out of 5 LSBs to adopt it. You can just have a PNB majority vote, and you can change a policy. And, that may be beneficial. Some people might find it dangerous, depending on what the policy is. And we can address those things one at a time.
Right. There may be elements that people would resist removing from the bylaws into policy. And that's where I would suggest starting with the simpler, more obvious, less controversial things like this. I keep a library of nonprofit bylaws. I don't tell that to just everybody. You might think I'm funny that way, but I've never seen a set of bylaws that have embedded the conflict of interest policy in the bylaws itself. So,
Beth, are you suggesting people might think we're nerds?
I think...
families already do, right?
Right. It's too late. I've outed myself. That's the kind of thing that that would be a simple change and a simplifying change. We wouldn't even have to change the content. I mean, changing the content is a separate issue from moving it from bylaws into a freestanding policy. So as we all do this work, I would suggest that as we go through things, we start a list of things we need to look up, potential changes. And we should probably compile all our list of proposed changes and then prioritize according to what's easiest, what's most necessary, what will be the simplest things to get through, that what do we need more information, rather than try to handle each potential change separately, individually.
May I suggest one other thing, Chair?
Yes.
And that is, you know, it is getting close to the end of the year. While we may be able to survive as a committee into February and then have other people cycle on, I don't think we're going to get any major, you know, revisions of the bylaws to comply with California law ready before the end of this session of the boards. And so with that in mind, I think we should probably, you know, I can't even imagine us presenting anything to the PNB before the session is over. But if we were able to do that, I would suggest, as you said, low-hanging fruit, or I'm going to say it in another way, things that aren't controversial. If there are things that are uncontroversial that we could just say, okay, let's make a quick fix to this thing, and it's not, you know, something that is going to be dear to anyone's heart, or, you know, we're not going to have to fight about it, we could possibly try to do some things like that quickly. But we should stay away from, under that theory, stay away from things that might be controversial and leave that, you know, for another day.
Right. That makes sense.
Unless, for example, they are really, really important and being out of compliance could, you know, subject us to serious problems.
Right.
And we'd have to at least bring it to the attention of the board.
Right, exactly. We don't have to solve a problem. It's simply to identify it. It's necessary that the board be made aware of whatever problems we can identify. And I will do my best throughout this process to try to compile something like a basic handbook for whatever committee takes this up next, so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel, which is pretty much what we're doing here now. They'll have a place to start. They'll know what the history has been, how far we got, when the most recent changes. So if there's a list of all the changes that have ever been made, you know, I'd love to find it. I understand there are certain individuals and places, institutions keep deep archives of Pacifica stuff, and it's not gathered in any one place. It should be. And I'll try to start to compile those resources as we go.
I would like to suggest that on KPFTX, where minutes are supposed to be filed, we might find a wealth of past policies that have been enacted. But again, that's a huge job to go through all of that. But, you know, let's see what we also know, that there are minutes that are missing, you know, minutes that were never made from meetings. That's another job somebody could take on some days, maybe try and create minutes for some of these meetings. But I want to just, again, reiterate the issue where if you make one change, it has ripple effects throughout the bylaws sometimes. So even if we're looking for low-hanging fruit, for quick fixes, we're going to have to be careful about how that may affect other aspects of the bylaws. People aren't going to be happy with this committee if we change some bylaws here and it has ripple effects over there, and we didn't figure that out before we proposed to change, and everybody changes the bylaws, and then they find out, oh, wait a minute, what about this over here? So we're going to have to, even if we only do a small effort, a low-hanging fruit effort, we're going to have to be very careful about how the ripple effect works.
Yeah. I would, acknowledging all of that, I also want to point out that it's not actually legal for your bylaws to be out of compliance with current law, that any bylaws we have that aren't not in compliance with current California law don't just not do us any good. They might actually trip us up. And that if it, being in compliance with the current law is actually required. It's a legal requirement. So
I understand and I agree. I'm just saying when we do it, we have to be careful to make sure where all the pentacles go.
Yes, agreed. Very much agreed. Is there anybody else who would be interested in reporting to the governance committee on this subcommittee next week, or shall I? I can
reporting to who again? I'm sorry, Beth. Reporting
to the governance committee. I forgot. I'm going to propose an amendment, a very last minute amendment to our agenda. If you'll all grant me a bit of forbearance, I distributed the minutes from the last meeting. And I would love to get those approved so that I can file them away, and then we know that's done. That was the meeting where we didn't make quorum, and so there's nothing there except. And actually, there might be the minutes before. There might be the minutes before that too. Darn it.
Okay, may I be recognized?
Yes.
I move to approve the minutes of. Insert the date, please.
October 13th.
Okay. 2023. The minutes of October 13th. You should ask for discussion and then objection.
Yep. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
And you want to make the speech about the proviso that they can be amended later.
Sure. The minutes of October 13th are adopted with the understanding that they can be revised at any point in the future, revised or corrected. Thank you. Thank you for letting me get that done. My omission.
Hey, may I say one more thing?
Yeah.
For the benefit of the members here, the reason we add that is to let you know that even if you haven't read the minutes, which I think I did, but even if you haven't, they can be approved like this, and then if you go back and read them later and you see something that you think is not accurate or needs additional information or whatever, you can do that at any time in the future.
Right. My to-do list, I think I reviewed everybody else. I will check with the local law school. I'll find out if Pacifica has notified AG of our bylaws update.
Please don't call the AG to find that out. Ask the executive director.
For sure. I have vague memories that indeed we have done that, at least with some. We haven't changed the bylaws that much in my time on the PNB. It was relatively minor things that the big changes didn't actually take place. But I'll check it out. And I will report to the governance committee next week and to the PNB the week after that. And on this side, I will start compiling resources as we unearth them for guidelines or a handbook for whoever follows us.
One more suggestion.
Yes.
Some on the national board over the years have been working on compiling a list of the policies among them are Nancy Sorden, the current secretary, Eileen Rosen, the former chair of the audit committee, and of course, you know, Grace Aaron and Alex Steinberg and others may have information in their emails. So those are people we can look to for information, as well as looking at the minutes in the on KPFTX.
As my work product from my year on the National Strategic Planning Committee last year, I produced what was adopted as a resolution to stand up the Pacifica Documents Archive, working with exactly mm-hmm. those people in cooperation with OTIS to do exactly that work. And I usually try to set up work like that for the next time that I'm not voted into whatever, you know, in case there's time on my hands, it'll give me grist for the mill. It looks like I'm going to have that opportunity in this coming year. I'm already in touch with Nancy and with Eileen and Grace and the other one around these parts that has deep archives that way, in a long memory, is Michael Novick. I'm sure there are others. So I will, whatever we prepare out of this committee, I'll be, it will be with the intention of providing it to that Pacifica Documents Archive eventually, you know, set up. Hopefully
can
not
I ask you that question?
Sure, if I could just finish that sentence. Sure, hopefully they will, one of the first tasks there is to establish some protocols in naming things so that we can gain some consistency, and that way we'll have a better chance of finding what we're looking for and be more predictable. So that might be a good reason to convene that task force sooner rather than later. So, James, you have the floor. Go ahead.
That would be some a task force that we would want to work in tandem with, but again, not go too far down that rabbit hole because that's something for somebody else to do. But if we're going to disentangle policies from the bylaws, it would be good to have a repository set up where we can put them.
Exactly.
And then we know that they won't get lost. I wanted
exactly.
to ask Vanessa if she thought Ron Pinchback, or if she could think of anybody else at WPFW that would have, you know, historical, you know, information in their emails or in their notes or whatever.
It's possible that Ron could. I mean, I guess the person I really think of is Grace. Grace could always find pretty much anything in about 5 minutes,
yeah.
going back 20 years.
Yep.
But I can, you know, certainly check with Ron.
Good.
Grace,
I think everybody think about it at their own stations. Who might be good at that?
We owe Grace a debt of thanks for the progress we made at yesterday's P&B meeting. And I'm due to check in with her sometime in the next few days. So we've already agreed we need to talk. So, so that brings us... is there anything else we need to say about our homework and what we're going to do between now and whenever we meet again? If not, then we'll move on to the last item before adjourning, which is to see if we want to set a next time for this committee to meet. The soonest I can imagine, if we want to be a little flexible, and the only time I see possible to meet again before the governance committee, should we feel next week, should we feel the need to do so, would be next week on Wednesday, direct immediately before the governance committee. I can be flexible on the when how early we can meet. I don't think there's anybody else out here on the West Coast that I'm compromising in that way. I could be available as early as 2:30 our time, and that would make it 5:30 East Coast time, or any time after that, as long as I would really not, I would really rather not write it right up against the governance committee. It would, because I'll have to chair that committee, it would help me if I have like half an hour in between to, because there's always last minute stuff to, you know, get done before we convene. So what are people thinking about trying to meet then? Or would you rather wait and find a time after that? And I don't even have a time to propose yet because I haven't seen the calendar. Actually,
okay.
Now that I think about it, if we're going to do that, we would need to do it as a continuation of this meeting, because otherwise it's not noticed. There are not 7 days between now and next Wednesday. So I just needed to say that out loud before we went any further. So I heard I think Michael and someone else.
Yeah.
Was that Minerva or
this is Minerva. Let Michael go ahead. I've got a question, but I can wait.
Okay.
I'll just say that for myself, I've got an awful lot of stuff to do, so trying to shoehorn something else in is not going to work really well for me.
Understood. I'm actually pretty much in the same boat. And I'm not sure how much of this homework will get done between now and 4 or 5 days from now. So Minerva had a question.
Yes, I did. It's what would be the reason that we would want to do this on next Wednesday? Since we're just starting to get into this, are we meeting in November, or we don't meet again until next year?
Good question. The governance committee meets next Wednesday. Yeah, that's the regular monthly meeting. It's always on the fourth Wednesday of the month. And so I've already got it on the calendar for the fourth Wednesday of this month, October, and then November and December and January, and by that time we might start to see some turnover in February, and I made sure it was on the calendar for March too. So those dates are staked out. You can count on those. As long as you're on the committee, you know to look for the entire governance committee there then. What we do with this subcommittee is up to the five of us. And
okay.
On one hand, we got a late start this year, and it's important work. So I would like to think we'll manage to get something done this year. And to do that, we have to keep meeting on a, you know, semi-regular basis often enough to actually make progress. But the schedule is not dictated by any commitments other than this that we've committed to work on this committee. It's up to us. And the only real reason, I always hesitate to adjourn one meeting without having a next meeting date. That was some of my earliest training as a community organizer. You announce the time and place of the next meeting before you adjourn. And we haven't done that. And it's not written in stone. We can figure that out later. For me too, next Wednesday amounts to pressure, and I don't know that I could accomplish all that much between now and then. So maybe we should just wait and figure out in email communication when it's possible to meet and practical to meet again.
Okay, and that was, it was really not about the main governance meeting, but it was about, again, this subcommittee. So,
right.
And that's why I asked, would the subcommittee meet in November, December, or are we going over into the new year? So,
I would propose that we meet at the earliest convenient date we can find in November.
Okay.
And if we can, wait, we should, I would propose that we meet at least once a month, and if possible, if we can find time without discombobulating people's lives, to meet a couple of times a month, we're more likely to get more done and make actual progress if we check in with each other on a regular basis and see what kind of progress we're making. So that's what I'm thinking now. Again, it's not written in stone anywhere. I'm willing to forego setting a date here now if no one else feels a compelling need and if availability would be limited.
Sure.
So, James?
Yeah, I personally have to set up dealing with the KPFK budget at the National Finance Committee on Tuesday, which
yeah.
is going to kind of drain me to be ready to do anything on Wednesday.
Right.
But I think because the Governance Committee is meeting on Wednesday anyway, we can integrate, you know, the work of this subcommittee into the main committee and, you know, brief everybody. And if you want to report on that, that would be great. Brief everybody. Look for feedback or input from the other committee members. You know, share with them what we've done and see if they have anything to add. See if some of them might be interested in picking up an assignment or two. And then, you know, as you point out, coming to a group decision about a meeting early in November. I think that's good. Good plan.
I can send around a little grid again where everybody can mark their availability and we'll see when it's most practical for us to make quorum, what works for most people.
May I ask an unrelated question, Chair? I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I thought you were done.
That's okay. Go ahead. I like
We had talked about some potential bylaws, amendments, or policy changes being brought to the Governance Committee. I happen to know that some people are getting ready to offer some, which may bypass the Governance Committee and go straight to the PNB, which I'm not sure how good that would be. So I'm wondering maybe if, I guess it's not appropriate in this meeting, but if on the phone, you know, perhaps we could consult about what to, you know, where we're going with that on the Governance Committee.
Okay.
Prior to the meeting, just, you know, some of this stuff may actually show up at the Governance Committee, but I doubt it. I think the people that I'm hearing from about it are planning to go straight to the PNB with it.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely like as much notice as I can get that something like that might be about to happen. It would let us be more prepared.
And I think maybe on the PNB, the appropriate thing might be to refer things that are brought back to the Governance Committee, because if people are just going to pop up with bylaws amendments at the PNB without giving everybody a chance to look at it and think about it, you know, it might be more than appropriate to send it back to Governance.
Yeah. That makes every bit of sense to me.
And on that note, I'm ready to go into the good night.
Is that a motion?
If you're ready to entertain it, yes. Unless anybody else has anything else?
I am. Is there any objections to adjourning at this point? Is there anything else anybody else thinks we need to cover before we do?
Not to cover. I just want to thank Sagerton for letting me piggyback on his call.
I like the magic of Sagerton. That works for me.
Okay, then.
Well, thanks all. Thank you, Minerva. I don't think I've worked with you on a committee before. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well, and the others.
Thank
all.
You.
Thank you all for being willing to take on this task.
Yes.
And I hope to see you all next Wednesday. Feel free to be in touch anytime if you've got questions or anything you think I should know about. And otherwise, we'll meet in the next meeting. Thank you.
May I add one more thought for people to go home with?
Yes.
As we've discussed, we might not get very far with all of this year because it's so late, but I'd like to put the seed in people's heads that maybe, even if they're not going to be on the board next year or, you know, whatever their status, that they might consider continuing on this committee as volunteers because it's interesting stuff and it's a great way to get familiar with the organization.